Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier. Game on. Soccer.
Now, there are six games down for decision in the Premier League tonight, and to run through all of them, we are joined by Merseyside journalist Fergal Brennan and Mark Langdon of the Racing Post. Fergal, to you first. We saw Jose Mourinho has come out today and said that he staged talks with Ireland striker Troy Parrott, but he says he is not ready to start first team matches. What do you think?
Disappointed. Based on previous comments that he's made about Troy's situation, I think this is classic Jose Mourinho, the way he deals with young players, and particularly when he feels badgered by journalists. He made the comment of, "I've had this conversation with Troy, and now I can update you." And I just think it's very kind of hypocritical, really, of Mourinho, to be honest with you. He's given the example of Jafat Sanganga, who's played a few games in the last couple of weeks, saying how Sanganga's progress has been helped by the fact that he's played lots of games at underage level, he's represented England at underage level, and then a journalist pulled Mourinho up and said, well, Troy Parrott's done exactly the same, he's played in exactly the same teams as Sanganga, he's played obviously underage level, and now he's been capped at senior level for Ireland, and then he kind of backtracked a little bit and said, well, no, but it's more about the pressure, and I think most people would look at this situation and say, of course, nobody wants the, you know, Harry Kane replacement pressure to be placed on Troy's shoulders. But given these sort of reasons, I just think Mourinho is making a rod for his own back. But he does have previous in these types of situations when it comes to young players. And I just think in terms of Troy's development, I think the door is now closed for him between now and the end of the season under Mourinho. He's made it very clear that he's not going to be turning to him as an option to even get a few games here and there. Possibly, maybe, if they continue in the FA Cup, he might get some minutes here and there. But I just think it's very disappointing that he wouldn't even consider him as a substitute role. He hasn't even been on the bench for the last 3-4 Premier League games, and Tottenham have gone without a striker on the bench. And I just think whatever message that is sending to Troy can't be good.
Mark, we really should have seen this coming, although we probably fell for the reformed Mourinho when he handed Parrott the ball there a couple of months ago, but he's just gone back to his old ways, really.
Oh, yeah, he has, and it's not a surprise, really. I mean, this is what he does in terms of when he first became Manchester United manager. He, of course, reeled off all of these players that he'd given debuts to, and, you know, it was like 1 minute here and 2 minutes there. He's somebody that relies on older, more experienced players, and he would consider Tanganga young at 20. Most other managers, I think, now would throw him in, a bit younger. I do think there's a bit of political, political battle going on here as well, in that Mourinho wants a forward to come in January to replace Harry Kane. And if he starts talking up Troy Parrott and giving him opportunities now, maybe Daniel Levy will feel like he doesn't need to spend that 20, 30 million in January. And by sort of closing the door on Troy Parrott in January, he's making it very clear to Daniel Levy that he needs a striker and he needs a sort of senior man to come in.
And Fergal, Leo Connor has also gone from Celtic this afternoon to Patrick Thistle. Is that a good move for him to get a few games?
It is. It's been a subject that's come up quite a lot with Ireland fans on Twitter over the last couple of months. He's barely had a kick first team football at Parkhead. And I think people look at this move and say, Patrick Thistle, it's not the most inspiring situation, but it can only be a positive for him. He needs to play football. That was the whole reason he left Manchester United to go to Scotland to play for Celtic. That hasn't quite worked out. I wouldn't necessarily say that he's done and dusted at Celtic, but he needs games. We saw in little fits and starts in the friendly for Ireland, where he got his debut at right back. He played very well. He looks quite accomplished. Obviously, Ireland are fairly well stocked in that position at the minute, but it doesn't do anybody any harm to have options. And he's versatile as well. He can fill in at centre-back, he can fill in at central midfield. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye on. But obviously, he'll be looking to get those games under his belt and go back to Celtic and say, listen, now I want to have a chance in the first team. And if not, I want to move on.
Mark, just sticking with young Irish talent, we're going to move on to Aston Villa and Jack Grealish. Aston Villa, they really need to start picking up more points on home soil, don't they, if they want to avoid the relegation?
They do. Jack Grealish playing unbelievably well at the moment. He's probably the only reason, really, that Aston Villa are within sort of, you know, striking distance of staying up. He's carrying the team. I think the potential that we saw in Jack Grealish when he was sort of in the Championship, and you know, there was question marks as to whether he could maybe step up in the Premier League. He's done that very comfortably. I know he supports Aston Villa. But there's bound to be a big queue of clubs looking at Grealish come the summer. He's somebody that Gareth Southgate, I think, will feel like obliged almost to put into his European Championship squad, because he's outperforming Maddison at the moment. You know, big debate as to which one of those two, if Southgate were to take one come the Euros. I think Grealish is playing the better stuff at the moment. Such a wonderful footballer to watch. So brave on the ball, the way he just glides past players, a sort of reminiscent really of a sort of an older fashioned player, the way that he kind of plays the game. He absolute joy, and like I said, Villa have struggled for goals, and it's just been Grealish sort of, you know, scoring wonder goals that sort of even keeping them in contention at the bottom. But this is a massive game against resurgent Watford.
Yeah, just on that, Fergal, tonight's game, Aston Villa against Watford, it really is a battle at the bottom, kicks off at 7:30. How do you see it going?
I'd be steering more towards Watford. Ever since now Nigel Pearson's come in, I've been impressed with them. It might not be the most free-flowing and exciting football, but they've gone from a situation under Kike Sanchez-Flores where there was no plan, tactically or otherwise. Obviously, Pearson's been boosted by Troy Deeney coming back in, not just for his goals, his leadership, his experience, and the fact that the players just radiate off that positivity that he gives them. Villa have been impressive in spells, and obviously at home, you'd always look to back them, but I just think Watford looks so solid. I don't expect this to be a high-scoring game, but I think with Deeney at the top of the team, I know he missed a penalty at the weekend, I just fancy them to do it. I think Villa, as Mark mentioned, other than Grealish, there's not really many players standing out for them. You'd be very worried for them if it wasn't for Grealish's performances and the goals that he's sticking in the back of the net. Really important goal at the weekend for them to get a point against Brighton. But Watford are just so well set up. I think, not to speak too soon, any Watford fans listening won't thank me for this, but I think they look like they should be okay. They've got all the basics right. They've got a really experienced spine through the middle of the team. And a team like Aston Villa just don't. And there's only so much you can rely on a little bit of magic from Grealish or a goal from Grealish to drag you out of these situations.
We'd like to hear from any of those Watford fans in Ireland. I'm sure there's a huge contingent of them.
I'm a Troy Deeney fan, I have to say.
Does that mean you're a Watford fan?
No, I just watching him coming back from injury and seeing the way he's been able to transform his team, like pretty much single-handedly, it's really impressive. And I also really like the way he conducts himself off the pitch as well. Just his interviews post-match, he just comes across as a really solid guy.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
We'll all follow Troy Deeney. Mark, the other game on tonight with, an interest in the relegation battle is Bournemouth and Brighton. And can Brighton pull off a result here and pull themselves away from the relegation zone?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting, Brighton, because, you know, Chris Hughton, much maligned really for the way that the season fell apart last year, actually points-wise probably better off than what Graham Potter is at this stage of the season. But I think that Brighton have played quite well this season and a bit unlucky to be in the position they're in. It feels false. You know, they've dominated a lot of matches, maybe need more goals from Mopay and Connolly up front, but I think that they're quite solid at the back. They keep possession really well in midfield, and they do look quite dangerous up front, even though they haven't managed to kind of finish off the chances. And this is a good opportunity, like you say here, to pull away from that relegation zone, because Bournemouth are just in a world of pain at the moment. Callum Wilson, so often the saviour for them, you know, can barely get a shot off at the moment. He's really, I think, suffering from a lack of confidence. Eddie Howe admitted at the weekend that he couldn't really sort of put his finger on what had gone wrong and how he was going to fix it, which was very honest of him, but maybe a little bit too honest at this stage of the season, with the pressure growing. He's the favourite in the Premier League sack race. Everybody in Dorset absolutely loves Eddie Howe, but at some stage you do wonder if the club will have to make a decision just for a shock factor, if anything else, just to, you know, to wake up these players, because at the moment they're just sleepwalking into the Championship.
Well, speaking of shock factors, you think maybe with Arsenal, with the new manager, that they'd really start improving. They're playing Chelsea. But, I mean, when you look at it, they're proving harder to beat, Fergal, but are they actually improving as a team, do you think?
I think the issue with Arsenal under Mikel Arteta is it's going to be the long game. This is all going to be about patience, whether the board, whether the supporters can have patience in what he's trying to do. You're right in saying there's an honest question to ask of have they actually improved. I would say yes, not by the amount that supporters would have liked them to improve. I think the issue for them, from a tactical point of view, still exists, that they do have a bit of a soft spot at centre-back. They've got issues defending set pieces. They've got issues defending crosses into the box. That was what happened against Chelsea in the game at the Emirates. And that's what happened against Sheffield United last weekend. Cross across the box, they didn't deal with it, and Sheffield United got a fairly deserved equaliser. I think the way they set up and what Arteta is trying to do is positive, but they're still very top-heavy. Whenever you talk about Arsenal in a positive sense, it's all about the forward players they've got. Aubameyang, you know, obviously he's suspended at the moment, but Nicolas Pepe, Alex Lacazette, Mesut Ozil, every now and again when he, you know, when he pulls his socks up. But I think from a defensive point of view, that's what Arteta needs to address, because as long as that continues to persist for Arsenal, they're going to keep struggling with inconsistency.
And Mark, have Frank's kids at Chelsea hit a bit of a lull, or do you think there's more in them?
They definitely have hit a lull. There's no doubt about that. Tammy Abraham, not as prolific as what he was earlier on in the season. Really, since about the November international break, since then they haven't always played particularly well. And that game at the Emirates that they did manage to win, they were outplayed for sort of 30-40 minutes. It was only when Lampard changed the formation, moved away from his back three, that actually Chelsea managed to get a grip on this game. I suppose really that the dominant factor for Chelsea here is that their midfield, I think, is much better than Arsenal's. And I always look at midfield first, because it's such a key battle in any game. And that Kovacic, Conte and Jorginho, if Frank Lampard lines up with that three, there's no kids in there. There's kids at the back and there's kids up front, but that midfield is really high quality. And, you know, that's where I think Arsenal need to one of the areas that they need to improve in for sure.
Fergal, what did you think of Roy Keane's assessment that Frank Lampard was getting an easier ride than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with his performances?
I think it was a strange one from Keane. I think he kind of started off with quite a strong point, and then he started going round in circles in terms of his thoughts on Solskjaer's performance. I think his point of managers being given more time is relevant, but I think ultimately United have seen ever since Sir Alex Ferguson that they don't have the patience for this, because things need to be improved. And I think Solskjaer's lifespan, he's getting towards the average. I think it's around 18, 19 months, the average lifespan of many Premier League managers outside certain exceptions. He's getting to that stage now. And I think what has angered United fans from the performance at the weekend was the lack of ambition. And Keane steered away from talking about that. He just wanted to focus on that he felt there was this kind of witch hunt against Solskjaer. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think there's lots of legitimate criticisms that can be made of Solskjaer, but Keane's comments, I think there was some sense that he spoke about that Man United shouldn't get themselves into a reputation of sacking managers at the drop of a hat. But also, I think Keane and other United fans need to kind of wake up a little bit and realise that there are real problems, and that someone of Solskjaer's profile, his experience and his mentality may not be the person to carry the club forward.
Mark, obviously there's loyalty to an ex-player, a past player of his, but is he also starting the debate for the club to look to other places, like recruitment?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not the only problem at Manchester United. And I think that's what Gary Neville was pointing out earlier this week, in that Ed Woodward has been the guy that's chosen all of these managers. He's the one that's overseen, was it £800 million worth of transfers? They've got the second biggest wage bill in world football. They're struggling to finish in the top four. You can't tell me that Jose Mourinho is a terrible manager. that Louis van Gaal is a terrible manager, and yet neither of them could get it right. I suppose even David Moyes, he probably wasn't suited to the Manchester United job, but he's not a terrible manager. He wasn't as bad as what he was made to look at United. So there are clearly problems much bigger than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think as far as Solskjaer goes, I do believe that he's putting, maybe not for himself, he may be sort of setting this up for a Pochettino, but I do believe he's putting at least the starting blocks in place. We've seen Williams come in at left back. I think he looks a decent player. McTominay, from when Mourinho first put him in, to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is relying heavily on him now. There's, you've got sort of James and Rashford in the forward position. So I feel like United, they're not where they want to be, and they're a long way from where they want to be. But I think that they're maybe in a better place than when Solskjaer came into the club, just in terms of getting rid of players that they don't want, which is always a very difficult task. The next step now, I think, is for a frontline manager to come in, probably in the summer, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is never, I don't think, going to be able, to hit the heights of a Klopp or a Guardiola. There aren't many that have got that in them, but I don't think he has.
And Fergal, for some reason, we always end up talking about the red half of Manchester, but the blue half is playing tonight. City are away to Sheffield United. They had a disappointing draw with Palace at the weekend, and probably going to Sheffield United mightn't just be the ideal place to be heading tonight.
No, not at all. Obviously, a lot's been made about the two losses that Sheffield United had over Christmas, but Chris Wilder's been quite honest about that and said, come on, get real. It was against Manchester City and Liverpool. But Bramall Lane is arguably, from games that I've covered this season, is arguably the most difficult ground to go for any side in the Premier League. It's loud. The fans are right behind the team, right from kickoff. And City have had issues in the last few weeks in dealing with pressured situations, be that coming back into a game or holding on to a lead. We saw that obviously against Crystal Palace at the weekend, as you mentioned. And I think Sheffield United, for me, they've had these little dips where they've lost a game or two here and there, but they're still such a collected side. Chris Wilder's got a really, really clear plan in what he wants. He knows what the players want from him. The players know exactly how to carry out his instructions. Obviously, there's no big reason for Manchester City to panic, but it's very difficult to see how Guardiola motivates the players between now and the end of the season when they see Liverpool disappearing over the horizon. And a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about they need to keep things together to get into the Champions League, and now they're in a position where they're still dropping silly points. Like, their Champions League spot should be safe, but for as long as they can't see off games or they're conceding late goals, that's going to linger and linger. And I think things like Aymeric Laporte is back tonight, he'll be a huge thing for them in the season running, but I actually think his absence is what's undermined them so much, because they've lacked that sort of leadership in defence, and that then bleeds through the rest of the team. And you look at a team like Sheffield United, Chris Wilder's been lucky enough to be able to pick his strongest side for almost every game, and they've been able to get used to playing with each other. Defence goes into midfield goes into attack, and Man City still look a little bit all at sea, despite the obvious talent they've got in the side.
Fergal, before we let you go, do you think that we will see Kylian Mbappe walking around Liverpool anytime soon?
It's a very interesting interview this morning where he kind of opened the door to potentially leaving PSG, but not really nailing his colours to the mast. I wouldn't say in the near future. I think PSG know what an asset they've got on their hands, and I think we could be talking a world record fee that Liverpool would have to pay to bring him to the club. But I think if we're talking in 3 months' time about Liverpool as Premier League champions, potentially back-to-back Champions League winners, which is a real possibility, then the conversation will change in terms of them being able to bring him in. But I don't see it happening unless we're talking about a world record fee.
Ruby, can I also say that I really like Kylian Mbappe as well?
Do you?
Yeah.
That's good for you, Marie.
Of course, you'd
probably love him if he was in Liverpool. Fergal, thanks a million. Mark, what did you make of Erling Haaland at the weekend for Borussia Dortmund?
Oh, this was a remarkable debut. Of course, Haaland had talks with Manchester United. We were talking about their recruitment and how it hadn't gone to plan. Haaland, one of those that was available for around about €20 million, made his Dortmund debut at the weekend from the bench. They were 3-1 down when he came on. Within 25 minutes, he'd scored a hat-trick. They eventually won the game by 5-3. There's already a lot of hype about this Norwegian wonder kid, and after that debut, debut, it's only growing. It was a fabulous way to start his career. He's a very big striker, but also quick and you know, with a good touch as well. He's not a sort of battering ram centre forward, despite his size. So he looks to have everything in the locker to, you know, to really develop into an elite European forward. Could be one that got away for Manchester United and a few other clubs.
Could be one that got away from England as well. He was born in Yorkshire and his dad, Alf Inge, was playing for Leeds.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there is an association, you know, with English football because of that. And it was, I think, just accepted, really, that Manchester United were the front runners to sign him at one stage. There's obviously was an issue. His agent, the super agent, Mina Raiola, had had disagreements with the club in terms of Paul Pogba and the fact that he wasn't allowed to leave Manchester in the summer. So maybe that played a part as well in the fact that he didn't go there. But he is absolutely perfect for the Premier League. I would be amazed, really, if at some stage we don't see him in English football, because he's just the type of centre forward that most English clubs love to have up front, a real sort of proper number nine type striker.
Mark, last week we had a pretty healthy debate about what could happen in Barcelona with Setién taking over. Now, I know you particularly stress that they need to be playing attractive football. They did have 80% of the possession against Granada, but I don't know how convincing they looked.
Well, it wasn't massively convincing in terms of the scoreline. They only won by 1-0, and that needs to improve, because Granada are not particularly great, and you know, Barcelona would expect to win by more than that most weeks. But the interesting stat there was the one about possession. 83% possession. They attempted over 1,000 passes in the game with a completion rate of nearly 92%. In terms of possession, a Pep Guardiola Barcelona team, only once in Guardiola's time at Barcelona did they have more of the ball than Setién's Barcelona, which I think, when you've only been at a club for a week, to have to quickly get your philosophy across so rapidly only can bode well for the future. The 100,000 people or near on that go to the Nou Camp every week, they don't go to watch the other team play football. They want Barcelona to have the ball. I think that there's something amazing about watching Liverpool on the counter-attack with Mane and Salah and players like that, but that's not really what Barcelona, that's not in their DNA to do it like that. They just want possession all of the time, you know, death by 1,000 passes. This was 1,002 passes against Granada. Eventually Messi got the goal. Yes, they need to improve, but we're already seeing why Barcelona decided to sack Valverde to bring in Setién.
Setién said, "I don't have winners' medals or a huge CV, just a commitment to an idea. And that idea is to hold the ball." And it's an incredible idea.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Barcelona have gone... Barcelona are the kind of the club of ideology. You know, this is a team that's built on philosophy. And so they've brought in a coach that will live or die by his own philosophy. And it's not taken him to the greatest of places before. The biggest club he's managed is Real Betis. He took them to the Europa League. But it could be a marriage made in heaven. There's also the chance that it doesn't work, and we're talking about a new manager, and he's sacked in the summer because he's not a winner, and that's how things go at Barcelona. You need to win, and you need to play attractive football. Pep Guardiola managed to do both. Villanova managed to do both. I think Luis Enrique managed to do both as well. So Valverde didn't. He won, but he didn't do it in attractive style. So that's just the way it is, and he knows. He goes into that job with his eyes wide open. You know, he knows exactly what's required of him, and if he doesn't deliver, he'll be sacked.
Obviously Barcelona are tied on 43 points with Real in the La Liga, but in Serie A Juve are on 51 points, but have Lazio joined the title race. They're on 45 with a game in hand against Verona.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Lazio have been the team of sort of the first half of the season in Italy. They've won their last 11 matches, which is a club record, better even than when Sven-Goran Eriksson was spending an absolute fortune when he was in Rome. At the Ciro Immobile, their forward, has scored 23 goals already this season. They beat Sampdoria 5-1 at the weekend. Within the sort of last 11 matches, they've beaten Juventus in the league. They've also beaten Juventus in the Super Cup, so they're not scared of Juve anymore. And that's half the battle against Juventus. Most teams kind of, you know, they just don't fancy themselves in terms of overhauling Juve because they've been so dominant. I think Lazio are up for it. Whether they've got the squad to go all the way, that'll probably, the answer's probably no. Being knocked out of Europe, they were, of course, beaten at Parkhead against Celtic in the Europa League. I'm not sure they were that bothered about the Europa League. That could be of benefit to them because the other two teams in the title race, Inter, are in the Europa League. Juventus are in the Champions League, particularly Juventus. Their kind of holy grail is to win the Champions League. So it does leave the door ajar slightly for Lazio. They're playing brilliant football and they've got a massive game this weekend. It's the Rome derby against Roma. And if there's one game, you know, you to watch this weekend from Europe, that'd probably be it.
Well, everyone wondered if Leicester had the squad a couple of years ago, and we know they did now. So it'll be interesting. Mark, thanks a million. We're going to take a break.
Game on.
On 2FM. Weekdays from 6.